Welcome, where business buying banter meets no BS reality. Get ready to dive into the world of buying and selling businesses without the fluff and fancy jargon. Whether you're a seasoned business buying pro or a curious aspiring entrepreneur, this is where the real talk happens. Because in business, there's no room for sugarcoating. Let's get down to the brass tacks.
Well, here we are. Hello, 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 Deb.
Hello, Richard. Do you like
you
that
know,
music?
You know what I love? Why I love doing these shows with you every week? Because they're so casual. Like 7 seconds before they hit the start button, he said, Richard, why don't you go ahead and take the lead? And it's so nice because there's just always these great casual conversations. No pressure, but a lot of good information. And it's wonderful to see you, as always.
I know. And it's not scripted, ladies and gentlemen. We're just given the facts, I guess, after combined 60 years of being in this industry where we're allowed to give some tips and tricks, right?
we've learned a few. Forgot plenty of them, but learned a few along the way.
Oh my gosh. Good. Forgot plenty of them.
I mean, it's not scripted. I did make a couple of notes of things we generally like to cover. But most of the time I never even look at it. But one of the things, and we're talking about franchises and resales. So I'd love to hear your perspective on buying a new franchise versus a resale.
Mm-hmm. And your question is,
is it like
a startup? Are you talking like a startup?
Let's call it with an established banner. So whatever it may be, not being the first or the pioneer, the first location, someone with a franchise with a number of locations, whether it's 50 or 1,000 or 25,000, buying a new location.
Yeah.
Paying your franchise fee, doing the build out, all of that, or buying a resale within the same banner that's already established. So, you know, and I have a particular thought on things, but I'd love to hear your perspective.
Well, my perspective is going to be spun from lender perspectives. And we, you know, franchise startups, if you want to start up a business and it's a franchise name, and it's a name we all recognize, startups can be done, but they're generally hard, just like a non-franchise startup, just because those first 2 years, it takes a while to get the income. But I will beg to differ that with a startup, a franchise startup might be easier than just a non-franchise startup, because you got the manual. It's ready to roll because there are other locations that have proven to be successful. So if I'm going to start up a business from ground zero, Richard, I might consider a franchise that's been around for a while though. Right. And most banks, they want to see the franchisor, the name, like Firehouse Subs. Everybody knows what Firehouse Subs is.
Yeah. Great meatball subs before it became a vegan. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a time, a non-bank lender that I work for, I did tons of Firehouse Sub startups. This was during COVID. They were just taking off like crazy, and they do well. They got good subs.
They got good subs, and they got toasted buns. That's what I like, as opposed to getting a soggy piece of bread from the other joints.
Yeah, you have toasted buns down in Florida, don't you?
Well, thank you very much. I resemble that remark. Yes.
so that's my spin. Now, I'll take it a step further, if I may, Richard. I would prefer if somebody came to me to say, hey, Deb, I want to start up a Firehouse Subs. Okay. Have you looked at if any successful established Firehouse Subs are for sale in your market that are already cash flowing and have employees? Doesn't that feel a little bit better?
Yeah, well, sir, I'm certainly on the same page with you for a number of points. One, yes, if you're going to start up something from ground zero, a franchise gives you a better shot. I mean, there's, you know, non-branded or non-banner franchises, startups. I mean, the failure rate, I think, is like 96% in the first 5 years. So it's no question, if you have a recipe that's proven successful in certain locations, then yes, that versus a generic startup, no doubt. But I'm not a startup guy. They're fine for some people. I've done plenty of them. You know, I'm the buy an existing business guy. And so in that vein, and I'm, I, I'm glad to hear that, you know, even the lenders look at it the same way, because I think it's pure logic, which is if you're going to buy a franchise, and in a moment we can get into who franchises may be for or not for, but if you're going to buy a franchise, I'm of the position, just based on, you know, seeing it over and over again, that buying an existing franchise mm-hmm. is the ideal way to marry the best of a franchise with the best of buying an existing business. And so without question, if franchises are what you're interested in, I mean, you can't, I couldn't even begin to tell you how much more favorable I am towards a resale for many reasons, including the one initially. It's really, if you're starting a new one, it's like a startup on steroids, or a glorified startup. It has worked in some locations, and that's mm-hmm. the versus buying an established one. And when you buy a new one, you got the build out, the approval process. You don't even know if it's going to work. It may work. It's, you know, the beauty of the franchise is the whole concept. It has proven to work in mm-hmm. certain locations by certain operators under certain conditions, which is a lot better than a startup with no proof or no track record. But there's no guarantee of success, because it is, again, a glorified startup. But then if you take a resale, and then you could marry the best of both worlds, and your due diligence, which actually I'd like to touch on later, the due diligence is actually a lot easier and for both parties, for the underwriter as well, I'm assuming, because you can look to the track record, to the franchise system, the whole franchise as a whole, and see how they've been doing. And so it's an added benefit during the underwriting. And I'm assuming that's a large part of what an underwriter will prefer versus mm-hmm. a startup.
Yes. Yep. It's a great segue into the fact for those that are thinking of acquiring an established franchise, the SBA actually has a list that they update quite frequently as to all of the franchisors, the names, the Firehouse Subs, the right. Massage Envies, you know, the names of the franchisors, how many loans, SBA loans, have been funded to date since came on to the market, and how many of those loans have defaulted or been charged off. And you'd be surprised, Richard, there are trends with franchisors that don't necessarily do well supporting their franchisees.
Oh, that's it's a huge piece of it. As a matter of fact, if you look at any meaningful franchise system, when mm-hmm. I say meaningful, they have a number of units. Every one of them has a lawsuit, and I'm not exaggerating. Mm-hmm. Franchisees, a lot of them are frivolous, because, you know, people buy them and expect the franchisor to do all the work, and that's not what happens. But there's lawsuits amongst every meaningful franchise from franchisees. And so, yeah. and the other part, which is, I'm curious, related to the comment you made about the SBA looking at, you know, failed the number of failures or whatever, is because mm-hmm. it goes in waves, right? All of a sudden a franchise gets very hot, like years ago, or frozen yogurt, and then uh-huh. it changes something else. And then when they seem to decline, they decline in waves as well, like especially the trendy ones. And that's where people have to be careful, because you don't want to buy a trendy business, franchise or otherwise. You want to buy something that's going to be, you know, stick around for a long, long time for you to own it, operate it, build it, and sell it. So the trends, it seems like the trends in the franchise, it just becomes more visible, because all of a sudden something with 100 locations is declining quickly. And there's a couple of them, I'm not going to name ones on here, which are not doing well right now, but I see it on the, you know, on the brokerage side, where all of a sudden you get a slew of franchises under a certain banner. They're all on the market all of a sudden.
That's not a good sign.
Not a good sign. Not a good sign.
And I would like any listeners out there that are thinking of acquiring an established franchise, you know, it's a good, as the episode titled stated, business in a box. You know, you have to follow the guidelines. So if you're somebody that likes to jump out of the box and say, I like this color of carpeting or this color of tile, well, no, you got to do what the franchisor rules are. And I remember Massage Envy out in the Milwaukee market. because I go there, I'm a client. I go once a month and get a massage. And the owner of two locations, she would get frustrated with the fact that every 5 years, the franchisor just decided, we're going to change the whole look.
Yep. Yep. Update it, renovate. Yep.
And guess who has to pay for it?
That's part of being in a franchise. and that, you know, one of the things to understand is franchises are not for everyone. I love the concept. It's a business in a box. It gives you a recipe. There's all the equipment that you have to buy has been tested. The systems that are in place work. It's a concept that has proven to work to a certain degree in locations already. Everything that you need to do, there's an instruction manual. Mm-hmm. And so that is really, I mean, it is the perfect definition of a business in a box because you turn the key and you go. Yeah. However, with that, the flip side is, to the point related to the individual with the franchise envy, it's the same thing anywhere. You always, first of all, as a franchisee, you always have to do what's in the best interest of the brand. And mm-hmm. the brand comes first. And sometimes the brand can be your own competitors. They open a location down the street and start to cannibalize your business, but it helps bring awareness to the brand. However, you know, one of the best ways I find to look at this is you look at it from a standpoint of support and control. If you're someone who wants support and doesn't mind not having control, a franchise makes sense. If you're someone who likes to control things and you can forego the support, then a non-franchise business is for you, but you can't have both. And a franchise offers one, but not the other. And I know for me, like I would, as much as I think the franchise concept is phenomenal, especially for people who lack the confidence or the business acumen, or maybe there's partners involved or, you know, a spouse who's not as supportive or feel more mm-hmm. confident buying a franchise. Those are wonderful people. Those are wonderful concept and perfect people for those who mm-hmm. they may be entrepreneurial, but it's not like you're challenging the thinking all the time. You have to follow. This is a recipe and you got to follow the recipe and there's no deviating. I would be awful in a franchise because I like to challenge things, not in a negative way, but always keep testing. And when you finally think it works, test again. And so I think people that are uber entrepreneurial, it's not for them. At the same time, it's a perfect entree for many, many people into the world of entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm. So if you like if the recipe calls for a cup of chocolate chips and your chocolate chip cookie recipe, Richard, if you like to put two cups in, you're not going to be a good fit for being a franchise location owner, right?
No, correct. And I'll be happy very short term with the two cups of chips, but then I won't be. But then the franchisor are going to take my cup away. So yes, that's exactly the way it is. You you don't put in one chip more.
That's right. Exactly.
And there are some. And if you say it should be a level cup, then it's a level cup.
That's right.
You know, it's not overflowing anything. It's a level cup. You follow the recipe. That's the reason for their success. So you can't buck it. Now, there are franchise groups or franchisee groups that you can, you know, have some suggestions, what have you, but they run it. You run it the way they lay it out for you. So mm-hmm. the beauty of a franchise is exactly what will penalize someone who's not right for a franchise. So that's someone's biggest consideration. Just make sure you have the right headset to follow a system. And mm-hmm. and I mean, if you have a system that works, why not follow it? Similarly, someone is, you know, really wants to not reinvent the world, but, you know, challenge the world and do different things. And this is not working in my location, so I want to try this. No, you can't do that. So you just have to be comfortable with it.
That's right. And I heard you say a word, location. That's big when it comes to franchise financing, whether a startup or acquiring one. You have a market territory and you got to stay in that box. You cannot cross the line. You can't cross the street to get business. Am I right on that?
Yeah, correct. And there will vary to some degree of what defines a territory. Some don't have territories. Other ones are very specific and very rigid. Mm-hmm. And it goes, you know, perfectly along the thinking of what we were just talking about. You can't go across the street because that's not what the rules are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I did a seminar years ago, and I started off with the following line, and there were probably about 150 people there, and said the line, because we're talking about franchises, and mm-hmm. I said the following thing. I said, finish the following sentence. Rules are meant to be, And then I waited for the answer. I said, everybody here who said rules are meant to be broken, you can't buy a franchise.
I love that.
I said, but the matter of fact is, franchise or otherwise, no, rules are meant to be obeyed. All rules, that's why they're rules. But if you're a rules meant to be broken individual, franchise is not for you.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I noticed a comment here. Philip has a comment. He had a franchise and his notes are, they wouldn't let him succeed.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And you could, and location sometimes, you know, one of the things where it's important to think about is if you're getting into a franchise, you buy one that's been around for a long time. Well, your chances are you're going to be able to get one location. You're not going to have to be able to get multiple ones. You may be able to buy some multiple ones over time, mm-hmm. but newer ones, which don't have the same proven track record, you can buy a territory and build some of them. But the comment related to Philip, I don't know the details, of course, but oftentimes that's perception, accurate perception from the standpoint of every time he may have wanted to do something that he knew would benefit his location. And Philip, I'm not suggesting that this is exactly what happened, because not, you know, it's some speculation or more conjecture, but if they restrict you from doing that, Philip's sitting there and say, hey, wait a minute, they're not letting me succeed. And he's right. And the franchisor is sitting there and saying, hey, we can't let this guy do these things on their own. And they're right. It's a marriage that's going to end in divorce, because they each have their ways of what they believe it takes to be successful. And it's especially important, you know, if Philip has a location or anyone has a location and it's not doing that great, and you really believe that you could put some things into place, your handcuffs are on. There's pros and cons to it.
Mm-hmm. Right on. There's pros and cons to it.
I see there's another note from Philip here, I think.
Here, Sia put it up for us here. Oh, 2008, bad time to have a gym.
Yeah.
I think 2020 was another bad time to have a gym.
Yeah, probably worse, because at least some people can get outside. Or although if you were in Florida, it wouldn't be a problem, because like we had COVID lockdown for about an hour and a half.
Wow, yeah. I'd like to touch on a real story just for our listeners. I had a buyer that was looking at an in-home healthcare franchise resale. I won't mention the name, but it was a very profitable in-home healthcare franchise location. And as you know, we're all aging longer. We all stay at home. You know, there's just more care is needed. Yep. And the current owner of the location had been at that location for 15 years and did what every small business owner over time should do, trained up his employees, Richard,
to operate
the business so he could be absentee. Isn't that everybody's dream? And that's why we want to buy these businesses that are absentee owned. So my buyer, the deal's looking good. We get it approved through the bank lender. He wants to keep his full-time corporate job and acquire this in-home healthcare franchise location. We got it approved like that. It's going to work because the seller did everything right. The key employees are running the show. Well, as I always recommend to buyers, there's this document called the FDD, the Franchise Disclosure Document, right? Yep. The FDD.
FDD. Yeah.
And it can be long. It can be very long.
It is. I mean, there's some of them 400 pages.
Thank you. I was just going to say they can be 400 pages long, and you better have an attorney sniffing through that document. It can be boring, but boy, oh boy, there can be some paragraphs in there that'll bite you in the dupa if you don't pay attention.
Bite you in the what?
Dupa. You like that?
I love that.
So here's what happened. We're getting ready to close, and the buyer didn't want to pay for his attorney to study this FDD document of 400 pages till we got closer to closing, because it was going to be an expense for him. Right. Well, guess what he found in the FDD disclosure?
What, can't run an absentee?
Any new owner taking over the franchise resale must be on site full time. Full time. We went to the franchisor. The attorneys tried to get them to break that verbiage or make an addendum to it.
No way.
They said no way. And you know guess what?
But, that's just good business because they recognize, for example, you know, when people approach me all the time with buying absentee businesses, and I generally tell them, first thing, keep in mind, absentee businesses usually equal absentee profits. But the first thing is it's a nice thing to aspire to. However, you're buying a business of which you know nothing about. You have no experience potentially in the industry, with the employees, with the suppliers, whatever the case may be. Before you consider running and operate a business absentee, you have to get the guts of the business into your belly. You have to understand how it works, because all of a sudden it may be great that they have a manager in place who from day one is going to operate this business. Well, what happens if that manager quits or gets hit by a Pepsi truck or decides to leave and go into their own business? Now you have to go into the business because there's no manager there. Now the buyer says, well, that's not a problem. I'll go into, well, you don't even have enough experience to know what type of manager to hire because you have no hands-on operational experience. So I think the franchisor is 100% correct in that scenario. And the buyer actually would be well served to have to adjust their thinking, because when you buy a business, you've got to get immersed in it. You need to know it before you can hand it over to someone else. It just doesn't make any sense. To me, it's like taking your kids and asking a stranger to watch them for an hour while you run around the mall. Like it doesn't make any sense to me.
That's right. Well, that deal fell through at the final hour. Yeah. And my recommendation is if you can get attorneys to review those documents, that agreement, the fees are in there. Yeah. Not only are there upfront fees, and yes, you know, the SBA lender will finance those fees into the loan project, but then there are ongoing monthly fees, right? Yes.
Yeah. The fees don't end. And one of the things that's also in there, there's a couple of parts, but first, people interested in franchises should read an FDD, any FDD, because they typically follow a standard formula and there's certain information that they all must contain. And so there's a gentleman, his name is John Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S. He teaches at Palm Beach Atlantic College. We did, my late partner, Devin, and I did a educational session with him. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of information published about franchises. He's like the godfather of the franchise world. I think he either started or ran, We Buy Ugly Houses and some other ones as well. And he really knows his stuff. So franchise, the FDD is important. People should read that and understand it. And this way, yes, get an attorney to read the particular one that you're looking to acquire, but in advance of that, read any FDD so you see the format. The other thing that they have in those FDDs, which is critically important, is they have a list of all their locations. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking to buy an existing franchise resale, an existing franchise and a resale, when you do your due diligence, you have to do all the due diligence related to what you'd normally do when you buy an existing business, and then you have to do all the due diligence related to a franchise. And so it's not necessarily double the work, but it's pretty close. But the beauty when doing due diligence on a franchise resale is your greatest resource are existing franchisees. So you can get, speak with a bunch of them. You typically want to do it out of town so they don't know that it's a particular one in their area that's being sold. But you can go in and ask that franchisee, what is the franchisor like to work with? Are you happy with the support? Are you happy with the business? One question I always encourage people to ask, if you had to do it all over again, would you buy the same franchise?
Mm-hmm. I like
how
that.
How do you expand it? What's the market like for selling? Because there's lots of communication between franchisees. And so all of the questions, are the margins what you originally thought they were? All of the questions, you get a hands-on view of the business from someone who's it's in the exact business. There could be some differences, but by and large, it's the exact business. What better way to do your due diligence as a buyer? I mean, you get it right from the horse's mouth, as they say.
Oh boy. Yes. And I can think of several deals I worked on where I suggested to the buyer to just call some other owners of the franchise locations. And it was eye-awakening. Like you could tell if there was a trend that something's not right with the franchisor, or you could tell if it was strong and solid.
And they will tell you, like, and I've had similar situations, people's tendency is if they're happy with someone, they may not talk about it a lot. If they're unhappy, they can't shut up. And so with the franchisee, if they're not happy with the situation, they will divulge an incredible amount of helpful information for a prospective franchise resale buyer.
Yeah. So what 30 years in the business, 60 for both of us, what are some big name franchise franchisors today that are alive and doing well? And then maybe what are some old ones, if you can recall? I mean, we all know McDonald's. I mean, that's just, but I tend McDonald's to wonder.
McDonald's is buying back its franchises because they realize the only way it can make money is to own the locations, because they've run out of territory. I mean, there's no more real estate in fully developed areas like America's and certain parts of Europe and Canada. So they're buying back their franchises. And that's another point, by the way, in the franchise agreement, in pretty much every agreement, and certainly every agreement that I've ever read, the franchisor has the right of first refusal on a resale.
Ouch.
Now, most of the time they don't buy them, but they can on the same price and terms. So they have to be offered first. And there's also a franchise transfer fee, which is usually not a crazy amount, but they have, you know, prospective franchise have to keep that in mind. We actually, in the course that we sell, we have an entire section devoted to franchises, because there really is an additional set of due diligence that has to be done. As far as franchise brands that have been around forever, I'm trying to think. So the big ones, of course, of Subway and McDonald's. I know what seems to be, it's not necessarily a franchise per se, but the Chick-fil-A is out of control. It's not really a franchise because they buy it with you. You know, you can buy a Chick-fil-A, I think it's for like $5,000, because they're partners with you. They put up the money. They're your partner. You've had to be a manager for at least a year. And I mean, they're ridiculously successful, because the person who takes over or opens the location has a year of experience running a location.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's good.
That's smart. That's very, very smart.
The frozen yogurt ones have all seemed to evaporate. I know in Florida, there was just tons of them, and they seem to have dwindled down quite a bit. I don't know if you'd have a lot of frozen yogurt you have a lot of frozen tundra in Milwaukee, but you don't have not necessarily a lot of frozen yogurt. Like, this time of year is not the time you want to be standing outside in shorts having frozen yogurt, I don't imagine.
Oh, we do. My daughter went to Yogi's. It's a franchise yogurt bar in a little rural town. She wasn't in shorts, but she did go. But we're not afraid. We got 10 more inches coming tomorrow. So we got lots of frozen snow outside.
10 more inches?
Oh, yeah. Sure. what are some other good ones? And then what are some, I think, tanning beds. There used to be tanning bed salons. Yeah, those kind of shriveled up a little
tanning
bit.
Tanning beds. You'll see some of the nail salons. I've seen a lot recently of lashes.
Oh my goodness. That's a trend. I wonder how long that's going to be around.
That's the point. You're spot on correct. I mean, that's a trend. It is not like every other one. It's just not going to last forever. No. So but that doesn't necessarily mean it's something you should not consider if it's a really inexpensive entree and a scenario where you can get out. So for example, when you do that, the math on that, you have to do some decent guessing, but how long this trend is going to last, for example. But can you house it within a location of a salon? Can you split rent with someone? You're not going to be able to sell it when it craps out. And so you want to look and say, okay, if I have a runway of 3 years, how much money can I make in those 3 years, including what I need to live on, recapturing my franchise fee, making some additional money? Cause that you have to do the financial exercise. Cause those are typically the ones that when the runway ends, you can't give them away. Cause you're at the point where you're not even generating enough revenue to pay the rent. So those trendy ones, people have to be very, very cautious about, but those are popping up like crazy. I see a lot of nail, and I'm surprised there hasn't been more in the nail tech, nails and acrylics and what have you world. There's one big group down here, but you don't see a lot of those. Food, of course, Taco Bells. I owned a bunch of Taco Bells that we still own.
In-home healthcare agencies are pretty big with that.
Yes. I like the ones, the Visiting Angels.
Yeah, they do TV? Well.
Yeah, that the population is aging. I'm surprised. There may be more. I'm not familiar if there are. But that concept, that's got legs because, with the population aging, I would imagine, and I would also imagine that there's certain pockets where the aging population, like in my backyard in Florida, where the average age is 200, that would be, that would probably be pretty good. But
Phil put up IV drips. you know, vitamins. Yes.
Yeah.
I go to one right now and it's a franchise. You? Yep. They started their franchise in Texas and now they branched into Wisconsin. They don't have a lot of locations yet, so probably would be a difficult franchise to start up and get SBA loan approval. But I think it's got legs. I think that trend, as Phil mentioned, IV drips, it's taken off.
So the IV drip is you're going in, they have a concoction for you and you sit there and they do like an IV of yep. your vitamins. And how frequently do you have to go?
There's different packages. You can go in once a week. You can go in a couple times a week, however much money really? You want to spend, Richard. If you have a hangover, you can go in and they'll hydrate you and make you feel better.
Oh, really? Okay.
There you go.
That's actually an interesting concept. There's vitamins and you know, there's so much garbage on the market as far as supplements are concerned that I imagine that this is probably like, you know, the creme de la creme of vitamins, but you can go and get a concoction, all the different vitamins you need. And is there's a benefit for it's all absorption, I guess, when it goes through IV, like 100% versus filler in the capsules?
I'm a great example. I went off all of my prescription drugs. After I left corporate America, I got off my blood pressure medicine. I'll just be real. I was on some other meds. And when I came off of it, I just felt unbalanced coming off of the drugs. So I went to this IV drip place and they just pumped me up with different vitamins. They did an ozone therapy where they inject ozone. They take blood out of you and put ozone into your blood and then IV it back into you. And it worked. And here's the funny thing. They don't talk about this kind of alternative treatment in conventional medicine. So
why would they? It's not profitable enough for them.
I know. Well, this makes us feel
not profitable at all. Yeah.
I called my doctor and I told him I'm not feeling good since I came off the drugs. You know what he told me? Go back on them. I'm like,
yeah, of course. You know, as a Canadian, well, I'm an American now. I share that with the audience since 2007. But it's still astounding. And my wife is Australian, and for the two of us, it's still astounding that your health is for profit in this country. So I guarantee that if you would ask 100 people what your doctor's reaction would be, 99 of them would tell you, yeah, go back on the drugs. It's just much easier. And that's where they all make money. It's sickening, but it's true. I'm really glad to hear that that's working. I want to look into that franchise. That sounds very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything related to that. They had the oxygen chambers down here and people were paying. I wasn't sure if it's even legit, if they're just blowing in air from the outdoors, but you saw a lot of those pop up, but the franchise is called IV drip.
There's all kinds of them.
Oh really?
Yep. Just query up, you know, IV drips, vitamin IVs and it'll pop up. There we go. Sia's got mobile IV. That's one.
Mobile IV. Oh, that's the next step. Only in America. As soon as there's a business, there's a mobile version. Yeah, of course. When I use IV when I'm in Vegas, Sierra Road. Yeah, yeah. My guess is you probably get attached to a bag the whole time you're there.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's my guess. Vegas, baby.
Drinking tequila shots with one hand and getting IV in the other.
Yeah, she probably puts the tequila right in the IV. Bad time, Papadimo. Okay, you answered that question. All right. Hey,
maybe we should put up your QR code of the 10 seller questions and Sia can put that up.
A lot of those. So it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. With Sia's in the background, it's up. There she goes. Special report, 10 things sellers won't tell you. There's a terrific report. And Deb contributed as well to this in the financing section. And this is based on, you know, decades worth of what we've uncovered that sellers won't readily disclose regarding the business, the employees, the customers, the suppliers, the competition, the financing, mm-hmm. purchase price, deal terms. It's really a terrific read and very helpful. It's about 40 something pages, but goes into real good detail for anyone thinking about a business acquisition, and it will open up your eyes to a lot of things you probably didn't even think about.
I like that. So the QR code is up there and that will get sent out to you with Richard's team. And then I'm going to just toss in quickly our show sponsors today, because without them, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. And Brilliant Beam Media is one of them. Sia is our partner. Yes.
Give yourself a drum roll, Sia.
Does she have any of that good stuff back there? All right, I have to read what we got here. Shine a light into your social media presence with digital content that delivers business results. Brilliant Beam Media helps your brand resonate to the right audience at the right time. You can learn more.
And by the way, both you and I can give her a very hearty endorsement because she coordinates everything in the back end of this show, which is we're a small show, but it's doesn't matter. It takes a ton of work, and she handles everything and makes it run like a Swiss watch. So
I love it. I agree, Richard. I feel like we can be more relaxed and be ourselves and laugh and talk about chocolate chips and butt cracks.
That's right. And butt crevices. Isn't that what we decided? We're going to give it an official name of butt crevices. Yes.
There we go. Right.
We just need to show up.
And our other lovely sponsor, Raquel Connection Corner. So Raquel Flores, she is the host and she offers a safe space where authentic connections can yield fruitful collaborations. I love this. Connection before transaction is her mantra. So if you want to check out Raquel, last time I checked, Richard, I believe she's pushing 55,000 connections. That's kind of a big corner. Don't you
think? That's a big corner. And she's awesome. I mean, she comes to, attends our show. She's positive. She has great, great feedback. I mean, we had the chance to speak with her last week, just casually beside the show. I mean, she's incredible. So I'm sure whatever she's doing exactly within that business it's got to be phenomenal.
Yeah. And if you are a business owner or aspiring to be one, take a picture of that QR code and get connected on her show. From what I understand, I believe it's running on Saturdays at
she said Saturdays, right?
10 a.m. Central Standard Time. Check her YouTube channel out under Raquel Flores Connection Corner. That's the way business goes round, is getting connected. Yep. Am I right?
Connected with the right people. With the right people. Yeah.
So do we have any other questions here before we wrap up our show? I think we answered some. Phil, thank you for your comments. Raquel, for showing up as well. We really appreciate it. And Sia, IV for you, baby. Anytime when you're going to Vegas.
Yeah, it's a good idea. You should probably open up a franchise there, Sia.
There you go. She could get all the IVs she needs.
All the Vegas you need. I love that town. And all the Vegas you need.
That's right. That's right.
A lot of fun. Deb, it's as always, terrific to see you.
You too, Sia.
It's great to see you. Yeah. But it's thank you. I appreciate everything you put into the show. And it's a great back and forth. And hopefully people are extracting some good information. And
yes. We'll do it again next week, Thursday, 2 o'clock Eastern.
Same bat station.
That's right. All right, everyone. Have a good one. And we'll see you next week, Thursday, 2 p.m. Streaming live.
Thanks, guys. Bye, Deb.
Bye-bye.